You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Tēnā tātou katoa. Nō mai hoki mai ki tēnei kaupapa kōrero o The Physics Room. Nō mai, whakarongo mai, whakatau mai. My name is Abby Kinane and I'm the director of The Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa. Based in central Ōtautahi since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to enable creative and professional development and work to support the acknowledgement and understanding of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production, and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. Welcome to episode 51 of Art, Not Science. In this episode, we'll be sharing a talk with Anna Iti, an artist currently based in Hiratonga, Hastings. Anna's solo project, I Am a Salt Lake, is on now at the Physics Room, having opened last Saturday night. Anna's film brings together footage from Kāpara Te Hau, the Salt Lakes in Sitou Ihu, abstracted diagrams drawn on glass, and a first-person text. These three elements recur, something like the pattern-based process of learning, where you repeat a sentence or a bar of music until it is embodied, becomes part of you. I Am a Salt Lake also registers the difficulty of finding language sufficient to articulate the relationship with the different whenua, seas, lakes, winds, houses that the artist passes through. This talk was recorded in the week following the opening, when Anna returned to her home and studio. The talk focuses on the three core elements in Anna's work: the mineral salt, the drawing on a foggy window, the screens of text, circling loosely around them and returning to ideas of voice, narrative, multiplicity, and risk that connect the three. Now, let's listen to the talk. Kia ora, Anna. To start off with, I wondered if you could introduce yourself, say where you're from, however you would like to. Nō hea koe, nō wai koe. Oh, ko wai koe.
Kia ora, he uri o te rarawa aho. Engari e te puaki au ki Waiharikeke, ki te tau ihu o te waka. E noho ana hau ki here taunga ina e nei. Ko ana isi tōku ngoa he ringatoi aho.
So kia ora.
Kia ora. Mahi uru Māori, so, you know, got to do the things. My name is Anna. On my dad's side, I'm from Te Rarawa, which is like iwi in Northland, but I actually grew up in the South Island, at the top of the South Island in Marlborough. At the moment I live in Hastings, in Hawke's Bay, and I'm an artist.
Tautoko ana tō kōrero e hoa. Ai, mahi uru Māori. So we opened your show here at the Physics Room last Saturday night. So we've had a little bit of time to have some settling of some of the ideas that were flying around in that week of install and lots of conversations between us. I wonder if we can just start with a really kind of zoomed out perspective. And I wanted to ask you, what are some of the key ideas and key concerns that are recurrent across your practice, across different projects?
Yeah, I think that some of the things that I notice coming up again and again for me are particularly to do with material relationships to history and place. That's sort of the big one.
Mm-mm.
I think lots of my projects start with like an interest in materiality. So, you know, this project started with salt, and that salt has a sort of important relationship to the place where it's being made. But in the past, that kind of interest has been often in like stone. Yeah, actually mainly stone. And that, I think that kind of material, part of why it interests me is because it sort of like pre-exists human relationships with a place. So it expands back into time. And then often that kind of material will be used to, as a resource, I guess.
And in so doing, it kind of records the kinds of relationships that humans had with the rock directly, or the whenua more indirectly. Yeah, that's really interesting. I actually was thinking about, yeah, that material of language as well that you often return to. Just to hone in a bit, thinking about I Am a Salt Lake, this new work, I'm aware that the area itself, Kapara Te Hau, is a really significant one for lots of reasons. It's near where you grew up, the top of the South Island, as you said, and it's got its own history of pūrākau and geological events as well. Could you talk about some that came through strongly in your kind of research process building up to this work?
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, I guess it's quite a meaningful place to me in a way. I've always been interested in it because growing up in Marlborough, and actually because I studied in Christchurch, I used to travel between the two places quite a lot. And it's always sort of something I was excited to see because from the highway, you can see the Salt Lake and it's quite spectacular at different times of the year because it changes colour. It goes pink when the algae is like forming during some of its more salty moments. So yeah, that's the personal connection for me. And also, like as a kid, my mum used to, there's like a beach nearby called Marfles Beach, which is a campground. So we used to go out there sometimes as well. But when I was researching the lake, the pūrākau that really kind of stuck out to me was about Te Hau and how the lake was formed. So I will kind of approximate the story, but you know, like I don't always get the exact details correct, but my understanding is that Te Hau was traveling on the Arai Te Uru Waka and then kind of disembarked at the point of Kapare Te Hau. And at that point, the area was sort of like a little puki, or I think maybe like a small hill. And he stayed there and he cultivated a farm for kumara, and he had his family there. And then the lake was formed during an altercation between Te Hau and Kupe. And they sort of had a fight or an argument. I don't remember the genesis of the disagreement, but during that, I believe Kupe did some magic, and then instead of like the puki was sort of inverted and it became the lake there. So that was quite interesting to me, like the transformation of the lake from one thing to another. And I also, I didn't really think about it in this project, but there was something about the garden, like the garden with the kumara sort of going into the salty lake. There's interesting things to think about in there, I reckon.
Yeah, it's like a transformation or something, or the afterlife of the kumara. What kind of nutrient, or yeah, there is something really interesting.
Or like I wonder like what's deep down below there.
Yeah.
Like deep under the lake.
What if it literally turned inside out and there's like a garden under there?
Yeah, well that's what I was like, whoa. But one of the things that got to me, or that really stuck with me about that pūrākau as well, is the idea that Te Hau kind of missed the people that he travelled with, and so he would look out from his location, I think down the South Island, and wait for them. Or there was sort of like a longing or something in his heart.
Yeah, it's interesting, like to think of the landscape as like registering these emotional states as well, like the riri probably of Te Hau, the rangitāne, tupuna and kupe, and then later this like sadness or this homesickness or family sickness, I don't know, and the one who stays and other people are like far away on the horizon down further down south. Yeah, you talked to me a bit about this kind of physical and other types of feelings that you had going there to do the filming. Can you just, I haven't been to the site, I just wondered if you could talk about how that felt to be there.
Yes, definitely. I always wanted to go there as well, like, but I had never been to the Salt Lake. Like, I've been to the beach, and I tried to get my mum to take me there one time, but she didn't understand quite, so she just took me to the beach instead. But you can, do you know what I mean? I was like, oh, I really want to go there, and she didn't want to go or something. But yeah. So when I went there to film on this research visit, it was the first time to go to the actual site of the lake. And I guess all the things that make it a good evaporation pond were the things that made it really hard to visit. And it's kind of nestled in between the hills. So like it was very windy and exposed because it's also coastal. So the lake is like on the edge of the sea, basically. The light was very bright. The sun like beats down on the lake. So while I was there, I was trying to, because I don't live nearby anymore, so it was sort of a journey for me to get there and I wanted to make the most of my time. So I was trying to look at everything and to take in as much information as I could, and it really, really wore me out really, really fast. I think that the first day I was there, it was for maybe 4 hours, but, you know, my eyes, by the end of it, my eyes couldn't see properly. When I looked back at the footage, a lot of it was all out of focus, and I was like, what the heck? Like, yeah, and also because of, I guess, the time of the year that I went there as well, the light dropped quite quickly behind the hills, so it was hard to film in. It's a difficult location.
Yeah. No, it was so interesting to me. It's like this really quite like, it's like it parched you in some way. It was like this quite harsh, resistant sort of landscape. Do you mind just saying quickly the kind of process that forms the salt?
Yes, I'll explain it to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. So the way that the salt is formed, it's a seasonal process, and it also is farmed. If you think about it like being a farmer, it is kind of extractive, but it's sort of a bit different. So what happens is over the winter time, the lake is fallow, like it's just resting. And then when I think about this time of year, when the weather starts to heat up, the water from the ocean is pumped into one of the chambers. So the lake has been divided into quite a few different chambers. And then the salt water will be pumped between them, sort of as the salinity of the water increases. So as the water evaporates off, that's when, the way I understand it, yeah, like the concentration of salt in the water increases. And then they would move the water into a smaller pond, I guess. Mm. And so they keep on doing that for like a couple of months. And then at the end of the season, I think they also pump off some of the water when they can. But so the salty mineral like settles downwards and then it crystallizes. Mm. And then when that's happened, they come in with machinery and they smash up the salt crust. But it's like, I've seen a video of someone walking on it. It's like ice or something. It's
right.
It's pretty crazy.
It's super solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Eh? And then I read that that's really forms the majority of New Zealand's salt supply. So we're a lot of our table salt, we're actually eating is from that area. And leaping back to that, the idea of like the landscape that's holding all these records of things that's happened in the past, you sort of think, I don't know, it's pretty amazing that it's like dispersing out to all these tables and like puku in the country as well.
Well, it does other stuff, like that's part of it, but it also, a lot of the salt goes into like water treatment and some of it goes into like farming, like they mix it into feed for animals and stuff like that as well. So it really is quite like spread around.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
So you go to Kapiti Teho, you like, you know, read the internet, you spend this time filming. I wonder, can you just talk a bit about process, like how this really unfolded as an idea into the artwork on Salt Lake?
Yes, I can. But I think I will just like maybe zoom back a little bit further as well and sort of talk about. So I was interested in the lake for this project, but I actually did a project previously, which was my first starting point into like really thinking about that place. So I think it was last year I made a work for a show that Hanahiva Rose curated at the National Library. Mm-hmm. And she gave us all the artists' poems to look at by different poets of the Pacific. And I picked out this J.C. Strum poem, which was like about like a similar, that's kind of what got me into the site, because the poem is about her at the top of, like in Collingwood, which is, I think, on the top of the South Island, looking towards her home. And that sort of like being in one place and like looking towards another place and having a feeling of longing or like connection. And so, yeah, that's, and because I had read that pūrako about Te Ho, I kind of was like, oh yeah, maybe I want to make something like that. And it had, that work was made out of a window, like a salvaged window with salt spray on it and a text traced into it. So that was kind of the start of my like connection or like making work about that place.
And yeah. With materials, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah, and an interest in the materiality.
Yeah.
Yes, but the process of making the show kind of started. So I had already done that. And then I knew that there was more for me in the site. So I started to research a lot, like quite widely. And I had interest in the history of the site as well, because I had previously been used as like a site for testing bombs when the lake had been acquired forcibly by the government. I think it was during World War II, right? Yeah, so I was just like reading all these council records about things that had happened in the history of the place. And yeah, I basically, for me, the process of making a project is kind of about like eating.
So, tell me more.
Well, not in a literal way, but sometimes. But like I want to just get as much information in my mind as I can. So a lot of the time it has to do with looking at online records. So like looking at papers past, like trying to find out as much information as I can. And I like got to put it all in my brain and then hope that an idea will come out of that, which it usually does. And so, yeah. But the site visit is also kind of like that eating input process. Yeah, so yeah, I went to the site, I captured the footage, and then I knew that there was like a missing element. And so I think I was like thinking about the water and like what that means, and I guess how this season there wasn't a salt harvest because it was too wet. But all of that water and stuff kind of like evaporates, or like it rains down. And then it goes into the ocean, and then like, you know, it's part of the cyclical thing. And I was like, oh, and I'm part of that too, because I like consume the water. Like I do those same processes with my body as well. You know, like you take it in and you like excrete it or whatever. And I think I was like looking, I woke up one morning and I looked at the window of my bedroom. Yeah. Covered in condensation. And I was like, I think that might be something.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Breathing.
But then I was like, it was good for me because I have made these works with sort of like a drawing window element. And so I was like, oh, this can be a callback to the previous work, which not everyone has to know. But for me, it's like a good way to kind of connect everything together. This is like quite a long rambling way of talking about the process. Sorry, but
I'm enjoying it because it's like ultimately for me the work feels really spare and really, you know, tight and simple. But I know that to get there it was quite there's a lot going in and then there's a lot. This is what's settled, but it's quite special to sort of see the journey that got it there.
Well, I'll keep on going there because there's a few interesting turns. Yeah. So I knew that because the location of the lake was far and kind of challenging and like exposed, I was attracted to the idea of making part of it at my home as well, because sort of the opposite, like it's near, you know, I have like the ability to reshoot, it's kind of intimate, I guess to me, there feels like there is something about being at home in the research and in the work.
Yeah.
So then I went through this bizarre process of trying to figure out this like drawing thing, which I find that it kind of settled down eventually. The other element that's in the work is that text.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had written the text previous or like earlier on in the year when I was writing another application for a different thing. And I was trying to process my ideas, like writing is one of the ways that I do that. I got back to the text, I had a look at it, and I was like, oh no, because sometimes I'm like trying to figure out what the work is about. It's like, you kind of know what the moves are or what the parts might be, but like trying to get to what it's about can be quite hard, which is like a funny thing to say. But I like looked at the writing and I was like, oh, that's what it's about.
That's really cool.
I already figured it out.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It definitely makes me think of this kind of circularity, like you're kind of like turned back and it's already there. It's not a linear development. Thank you for the process. I'm just going to something really kind of crystal and thinking about the title, I Am a Salt Lake. The salt is the I in there. And as is sort of risen already, you've kind of centered the salt mineral as the, it's like the primary material in this work. But I was thinking about salt, watching your work and thinking about this interesting thing where it's like internal to the body. It's like absolutely crucial to human health, but it's also dangerous if the balance is wrong and we're too salty. And then the idea as well that it's naturally present in the moana, but then brought into this context, it sort of takes on this kind of industrial process and becomes a commodity. And there's kind of, yeah, there's a sort of tension inherent in this material or in this material in the kind of context that you've showed us. I guess that's a funny question, but I'm like, what is your relationship to this? Like, I sense this kind of complication and maybe it's not a resolved one. Maybe there's more works to come from this kind of idea and material.
Yeah, I think it is kind of complicated. I guess when I enter into research about something, I kind of want to understand it in some way. To me, like I was had sort of had this thing about the salt where I was like, well, this is like from the ocean and it's like being farmed by these like industrial dudes for whatever purposes. But I was like, who does it belong to? And like, you know, like, is that part of fisheries or sort of like a bit of a gray area?
Yeah, almost? Yeah. Is it of the land or of the ocean? And then of the land, does it belong to the manawhenua of that area? And yeah, so that's really interesting.
And also I was like, oh, is the farming good? Is the farming bad? Because like it is a renewable resource, like it keeps on going, but then I don't know, it just feels like quite a complicated thing. And I guess sometimes you do what I want to like kind of categorize things as like, is this good or is this bad? But actually it's kind of like it's hard to kind of make it that straightforward. But I also, there was like something to me about the salt where my understanding is that it's sort of something brought here by settlers. It was not like Māori didn't have they didn't make salt, you know, because of, even though it's like vital and we have to consume it, because of the way that the tipuna ate food from the moana, they had their intake of salt in that way. So there's like, it does occupy this sort of funny, complex place in sort of our history. I don't know if they answered that very well, but that's my kind of, it's sort of like a riddle or something.
Yeah, this is maybe where my question kind of went astray as well. Yeah, there's like, it's complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking all your work. I've always been interested in how you, these elements of kind of transformation or things that go from an invisible state to a visible material state. And salt just seems like such a, it's another very interesting example of that. Just thinking about listeners who haven't seen the work and potentially will only see stills of the work, can you just return to the drawing component? What's the drawing of, what's the process like for you? And is it drawing or like what's the, can you speak about that work on the window, the element?
So I think that drawing is a way of thinking or like thinking through something. And usually for me in my work, writing also occupies that same kind of space. Like I write a lot to figure out sort of elements of the work, but I think another way you could do that is through drawing. And most of the time drawing is not my way of getting there, I guess. And I think in this work, because there's like text within it, I was also thinking about ways to communicate. And I think that drawing is like a, you know, it's a nonverbal mode of communication. Yeah, I think I'm always like trying to communicate with the viewer, maybe not always successfully, but that's like good for me. Like I just want to try and give information in different ways. So the drawing and the work, it started out quite differently to how it ended in the final piece. So it's kind of a diagram. Like, first of all, I was trying to describe what we talked about earlier, like the way that the salt is formed. So like it's sort of traveling through these different chambers and becoming more salty. I think that process is like condensing. So I started off trying to make a diagram on the windows that kind of explained that. But it was like quite complicated and not very easy to follow. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I started to do like a drawing of the lake and the different elements that were present. So like the sun, like the heat from the sun and the wind. And I was trying to kind of describe the movement of the water between the different chambers. And I made these drawings like over and over and over again. And they were, when I was looking at them, I was like, oh, it's just not quite right. So what I settled with in the final work is super simple, like a line drawing where it's just me tracing sort of this wavy pattern that slowly fills up the windows. So, you know, it travels across. And to me, that kind of simplification of the drawing kind of holds all of those ideas in it. Like it could be like, you know, like a wave, like the movement of the ocean, or maybe like the rays of the sun. But, you know, they've been organized, they're stacked up on top of each other, so they've been made orderly. Or I think the one, oh yeah, like when I was trying to draw the wind, that's quite a difficult like thing to draw. So how do you describe that? I guess this is the same thing. It's like the diagram is trying to explain unseen forces. So it's quite symbolic, or it's, you know, it is that different way of trying to describe something that makes sense to people. But I think the one that I feel the most in it that I like and relate to is kind of the condensing. So like the, you know, like the salt sort of laying down on top of each other and this like process of like kind of filling up or maybe squashing down almost. That's what the diagram represents to me pretty much.
Yeah, I think it's really beautiful that in that simplicity, like it's quite a lot of space for the viewer or the reader of the diagram. For me, it's also, it connects a lot back to other of your works where it's not the wind so much, but like the breath that's fogging up the window. Yeah, I guess like seeing your hands as well, like this is like a motif. This is like something that I've seen before in other of your works. And it's like, I guess I feel like as a viewer of multiple works, there's this kind of generosity that I experience where it's like, we're learning alongside of you as well. And it's a, yeah, it's like a very long-term process, which which I like.
You also said to me that when you saw it, that you thought it might also be like writing, like non, yeah, like a scribbly that you do when you're like learning. You're like, what does writing look like? It looks like this.
Yeah, to me, you know, it looked like a script, and it's, I guess, mm-hmm, always you bring these kind of presets to work or to practices that you love. And I was like, it is a page, because I've seen pages before. They kind of, I arrive with certain, I don't know, certain images as well to the work, which feels cool to me, because it feels like this kind of reciprocal thing, or like a conversation that's unfolding over a long time.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
I want to sort of isolate this one particular bit in the text, which really, really fascinated me. It hit me quite personally, because I think I was just like going along with that text, and it did have a bit of sense of like a movement of air or water or something like this. And then there's this moment where it's quite a harsh jolt, I found, really affected me reading it. The moment I'm talking about, it says, "Hope the waters don't get so strong, rise up and wash me away, bang me back against the land and bury me in the seabed." And I guess I've been thinking about that quite a lot, like this idea of being at odds with the environment, or the kind of like violence that some of our interactions with the earth can have, the way the weather and the seasons kind of increasingly affect us in very difficult ways. And just the idea of being at odds in some way, like being at odds with a lunar cycle, or even being at odds with the cycles in your own body. What were you thinking about when you were writing that, if it's not too personal to us?
No, I can get into it. I mean, one of the things that I try to do with my work is to kind of bring in like a multiplicity of voice. So in the text, I'm kind of talking about if I was the salt lake, or in another part, if I was the wolf. I think I am interested to think about what kind of concerns I might share with those types of like non-human or, you know, constructed things. Like if they had feelings, what would they be? And like, what feelings do I have that are the same? That's kind of part of it. But the wolf is scared of being like washed away, because that's what happens. Like, you know, they're exposed to the elements, to the water, and, you know, where I live, like to the slash and stuff like that. Like there are destructive elements in there. And the salt is also scared of being washed away, because it's vulnerable to the weather, because it's being farmed. So maybe it's about like making progress in this process, and then the water comes and it all gets diluted, and then this crystallization process hasn't really been able to occur. But at the time that I have been making the work, I'm also thinking about this important journey that I have to go on soon. And I have worries that, like, when you need to go and do something important, I always worry that I won't go and do what I intend to do. Like, I'll just be, dissolved, or, like, washed into something else. Like, I won't be able to achieve my intentions. So, yes, but I think the salt lake and the wolf can share those kinds of feelings.
Oh, thank you. That's actually, yeah, that's a really beautiful way of describing it. Like, it, to me, this feels like almost a tension between what the kind of like integrity of your identity as an individual, or one's identity, be that the salt or the wharf or whatever, and then the way that, like, we know we're part of something bigger and collective, but maintaining those two kind of states of being in balance is quite, there's some vulnerability implicit in it. This word safety does come up a bit in the text. I'm really happy that you touched on that too. The idea of how will I go, or how will I stay safe? I guess that leads me to a question of risks that you took, or that you take while making work. And I'm really interested in what guides some of your decision making with regard to those risks.
Yes, I think that it's kind of like, I don't know, it sometimes is a bit of a funny thing. I feel like being an artist feels risky. Like, maybe that's a boring thing to say, but it's quite a tumultuous, unstable place to occupy or like thing to pursue. So yeah, that is definitely part of it. But I think maybe what we're talking about as well is like within my work and like trying to stay safe and stuff like that. I think I'm not sure if it's always, or maybe it is. In the work that I do, there's always, for me, simmering underneath like quite a personal connection to, yeah, what I'm doing. Like, and it's not always on top of like visible to everyone. And I think part of my concerns about staying safe is like using that, because I think it's part of what gives the work like a bit of life maybe. But it's like you want to give it that, but you also want to kind of keep yourself shielded a little bit, but also not to kind of keep myself out of it, but to keep it open for people. Like you know, like it should be, it's vulnerable, but people need to be able to connect with it in their own way and not have to take like my stuff out of it. Yeah. I also like with the process of making, it is, I feel like you or I am like following my instincts.
Totally.
Yeah. And that feels risky though, like because it's not like, oh, you just do A, B, and C, and then there's the art. Not for me anyway. It's like I have to sort of follow these hunches and feelings and like have faith that something is going to happen. And so far, something has happened. But I always worry, like to me, there always feels like the risk that something will not happen, or something will happen, but it will be something that's not good.
I think it's part of the power of the work is that it holds that kind of space for something not to have happened, like something different conditions that may not have crystallized. Yeah, I think sort of broadening that idea out, I haven't got a very articulate way to talk about this, but I was thinking after watching your work a number of times about the way that I think your work holds a kind of a space for things which aren't solid, for things which aren't, I guess, for the experience of like how it is to be in the world and not be fixed, not be in place, to kind of understand yourself as like multiple, as you said, capable of like modes of expression and like multiple different voices, to be kind of forming in a state of continuity. Yeah, so I guess I'm interested in what you think about the work's capacity to do that. Like you spoke about wanting to understand the salt or understand the site. Do you feel like you come to kind of a place of understanding, or you at some level are you quite interested in like defying the kind of rational modes of understanding that we're quite familiar with?
That's such a good question. It's quite difficult. I think it's maybe fallen at a time. Well, sometimes I don't understand where I've got to until quite a bit later, because I have to, you know, like I say, you have to trust, you have to go through the process. And then for me, part of it is when things become quite unclear, which is probably like, you know, what you're talking about, that's in there. Like there is sort of this non-settled sort of liquid part of the work, I guess. And I don't know if it's like really something that I can control. Maybe I've just developed a way of making things, and that's the point where it stops and that feels fine for me. Like I do, like I said, I don't, for me, the work is good and the work is satisfying if it is open for people. So it's less interesting for me to kind of drill down and squash it into, or kind of be like, yes, I understand it now. And I sort of feel that way about all of the works that I've done. But with a bit of space on the other end, like when I look back at stuff, I feel I understand it better than, especially within the body of work that I have made. Like, I can see the links, but when I'm in there making it, that stuff is not very apparent.
Yeah, for me, that's been a real joy of this project as well, is looking back over some of your projects and being like, oh, I feel like you've introduced a new metaphor, a new way of understanding, which can apply back across the existing projects. Like for me, this one was like this idea of sediment or sedimentation and layering. In other situations, it's been to do with pages, as I said, but they're not so far distinct. It's kind of motifs or ideas, but that's a connection that I really directly kind of have inherited from your work. So I appreciate you.
I have to say, this work does to me feel like something new or something different. In a way, they always feel new, but I think, I don't know if it's just I'm coming to a time within my practice or whatever where the way that I might want to work is changing. I think that there's more for me in the site and in thinking about that stuff. And often at the end of the project, I feel like I'm done with that for now. But this doesn't feel that way. Like it feels like there's more work to be done.
Oh, that seems like a beautiful place to finish, Anna. I just want to thank you for trusting us with this work, which is fresh. It's really special to have in the gallery. And yeah, I do have this strong feeling of like every time I watch it, it's like a new kind of layer of something is settling into place. So yeah, I'm looking forward to where that goes. And I do want to mention, to acknowledge that we're working on a publication together as well. That will be another outcome of the project and we'll come together in 2024. Just putting that down on the record.
Put it down.
Kia ora hoa, it's been awesome.
Kia ora.
That was Anna Iti talking about her work, I Am a Salt Lake. If you can, I encourage you to get along to see the exhibition itself, which is on here at the Physics Room until Sunday the 22nd of October. If you live outside Ōtautahi or can't make it to the show, there are still images already up on our website, physicsroom.org.nz, and these will shortly be joined by full documentation of the exhibition. In publication news, we've just launched a new book, The Moon and the Pavement, which responds to our partnership project with Ashburton Art Gallery in 2022, featuring artists Teresa Collins, Yukari Kaihori, Sam Taus, and Susu, alongside a new commissioned text from Chloe Lane. You can purchase a copy of this at the gallery or through our website for $15. And coming up next in the gallery, we have an exhibition by Selena Urshadi and James Tapsell Kururangi, curated by Amy Wing, which will open on Friday the 27th of October. Thank you for listening. Tune in again next month on Friday the 20th of October at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art Not Science. Hei tau wā.
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Scientech, and the Crater Rim.